Channel Zero.
Channel Zero is a newly formed podcast network of several anarchist and anti-authoritarian podcasts across so-called North America. Our goal is to create an ever-growing platform to expand the reach of anarchist analysis into a larger and more public audience. Currently, we are made up of The Final Straw, The Crime Think Ex-Worker Podcast, Submedia, The Soulcast, Which Side Podcast, Resonance, an anarchist audio distro, and the IGDcast. Our goals with this network are several-fold. First, we aim to support each other and expand the audience of all of our podcasts with a common website and platform where each of our shows can easily be found. This website has already been created and will feature all the latest podcasts in the network, give information about all of the shows, and also have a section entitled Ask an Anarchist, which will allow new people the opportunity to ask show host questions. Second, we have created a 24/7 stream where you can hear all your favorite shows in an ever-evolving range of anarchist audio. Walking to work and want to listen to a podcast? We got you. Staffing at the local info shop, radical bookstore, or community space? Just press play. Heading out for a long road trip to confront some fascists, help support a picket, or stop a pipeline? We know just the thing. Instead of turning on Pandora or Spotify, listen to us. Lastly, to make this a reality, we're also going to be making an easy-to-use Channel Zero phone app. We live in an age where the power of the mainstream media, historically aligned with neoliberalism and the Democratic Party, is falling. The gap that it is leaving is being filled by a host of other medias. While revolutionary anarchist media is growing in size, at the same time, so are our enemies on the far right. Creating engaging and exciting shows and podcasts is part of winning this battle. And in order to do that, we need exciting, beautiful, and engaging platforms, projects, and content. We're asking for your help in getting this off the ground. Channel Zero.
At the airing of this podcast episode, we've just launched a crowdsourcing campaign to pay for all the costs for the first year. Channel Zero. If you want to support this project, visit channelzeronetwork.com. That's channelzeronetwork.com and support the Indiegogo campaign that we just launched. Channel Zero. Yeah, I guess this is a sort of Channel Zero promo roundtable we're doing real quick. Does everybody want to just introduce themselves and what projects they're speaking on behalf of today?
My name is Soul, a.k.a. Tim, and I run the Soulcast.
I'm Jeremy from Which Side Podcast.
Hey, this is Amalfia from Resonance Audio Distro.
And this is Mike from It's Going Down, the IGDcast.
So I guess let's just jump right into it. So for a couple months, we've all been talking about doing a podcast network, and the idea has evolved a lot through these conversations, and we're just getting ready to launch this network, and with a 24-hour radio stream online. Does anybody want to kind of explain what Channel Zero is and, what is it?
Well, I'll go first. I think the first thing is just creating a common platform where we can all kind of rise together. And also recognizing that podcasts are, not only is it something that we're already all doing, I mean, Resonance is actually doing it in a lot of different ways. They're adding videos and all that stuff. And obviously Submedia has a long history of just doing videos and stuff like that. But definitely podcasts are a growing media that I think we need to engage with more and more. And it's great to see a lot more anarchist, anti-authoritarian podcasts like spring up. And we just kind of want to create a hub that allows us to all grow and is a central place where people know that they can go to get the latest podcasts and also like create some cool stuff like a stream, an app, all that kind of things.
I really love the idea of the network being able to create a space where you can passively consume, where most podcasts you actually have to actively try to consume. You have to open the app and find the one you want to listen to and then, go to the next one. And you have to be very engaged in your content. But by having the streaming channel, it's one button, you get content thrown at you and you can passively do it. I really love that idea of it.
Yeah, you can just like leave it on in the background and like have it on in a room.
I was going to say, in our wonderful app, will you be able to kind of like skip like on Spotify or Pandora? You're like, I don't like this song. Can you go ahead to the next one? Or I've already listened to this 3 times and I don't want to hear it again.
Totally.
I don't know. I can't answer that. I don't know. I mean, ideally in the app, you would have the live stream, which is automated from a server. so that you wouldn't be able to fast forward on that. But on the RSS feed on the other side, it should also be, you know, just a whole bunch of files there that you can just listen through to specific episodes, and they'll all just be there. So if you don't want to listen to the stream, you could switch over to the feed and just click on. Oh yeah, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to listen to that anymore.
Gotcha.
If there was a skip, I could just imagine looking at the data and being like, oh, 500 people a day skipped Wishside because you suck.
Oh, God. That's messed up.
It at least won't repeat episodes once a day. Hopefully, you know, if we get enough in there, we could extend that to be more than once a day. Or less than once a day, like once a week or something. There's only so many anarchists, you know?
I mean, I'm really excited just to have something where I can just put it on and just, you know, maybe find something or listen to something I haven't heard before. I mean, I think that it's gonna be cool. And I think for people that just want to put something on while they drive or walk to work, and then hopefully, like, they'll be able to find different podcasts they haven't heard already.
Yeah, I mean, and ideally, I would love, I don't know how, I mean, because me, I'm always listening to the C-SPAN app, and I'm always just like, you know, oh, it's another boring-ass Senate hearing, you know? And I would love to mimic that with us, and so, like, during the day, it's like playing all the panels from some conference somewhere, and just super nerdy, radical shit, you know, so that people who are putting together conferences and events like that, they know that they can submit the audio to us, and if it's good, it can get out there. And
I was curious what podcasts people listen to that aren't represented through the podcast network as it presently is constructed, and regardless if they're anarchists or radical or what have you, anything people are listening to that's really good. I'm enjoying Rust Belt Abolition Radio. Comes out of the Midwest somewhere, I want to say. It's about prison organizing. Also, there's a similar project called Kiteline Radio from the Midwest as well that is also about prison organizing and abolition issues.
Most of mine that I consume aren't radical based. I'm really big into history podcasts. Like, I love the China history podcast, just because I only had a European centric history learning growing up. So I love diving into that. And then I also love another podcast called Hardcore History, where they do in depth history on some crazy shit. So
Dan Carlin.
That's right.
Yeah, I listen to a whole bunch of shit. I like the Permaculture Voices podcast, even though sometimes it gets a little capitalistic. I like the Intercept podcast with Scahill. I like.
I like. I have to check them out.
That's great. I mean, you can just skip Democracy Now and just listen to that once a week.
How do they do that? Do they have people on, or do they do the news, or how do they do that?
They just go real in depth on shit. You know, in one episode he'll interview, like, you know, Immortal Technique, Naomi Klein, you know, Seymour Hersh, Edward Snowden, you know, and so it's kind of like, you know, a lot of heavy hitters, but they kind of go in depth and talk about sort of whistleblowery kind of shit. So, what other podcasts are, like, yeah, those are the ones that I like the most. And sometimes I listen to War on the Rocks, which is just like a foreign policy podcast where military people get drunk together and talk about how they want to rule the world.
Jesus.
Wow.
So not exactly what it's about, but it's kind of that.
Most of the podcasts I listen to are actually y'all's podcasts, the ones on the network. I listen to, like, all y'all's stuff, and then when I want a break from that, I listen to, like, a lot of, like, fiction podcasts and, like, stories, because it's, like, kind of just, like, more narrative flow. And so I'll listen to, like, the New Yorker Fiction Podcast or, like, Welcome to Night Vale or something like that. Because, yeah, I think there's kind of like, it like scratches two different itches when there's the like news and politics stuff and then the more like narrative stuff.
Right on.
Soul sent me the El Chapo Trap House and I have listened to that.
You know, that's
my big name podcast I've listened to.
I just want their Patreon.
Oh yeah, don't we all?
We could all retire off that. There's up to like $25,000 per episode, right?
I don't think it's that high. I think it's like 10.
Oh, that's
10K. But I mean, they've got like how many people working on it? Like 5. So I mean, everybody gets $2,000 a month.
Yeah,
that's or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's like $50,000. And they all get like 10. I know, I think it's like 50, yeah. And I was thinking if there's 5, then they probably get 10 each, which is insane.
So we just have to be edgier, y'all. We just got to be really edgy.
I mean, we can be so edgier, but, you know, might get some knocks at the door.
Oh, God. Well, anything else about the podcast network? Anything else? Like, is there anything else y'all are excited about the podcast network that we haven't discussed yet?
You know, one of the things I'm actually really excited about is that where we kind of, at which side, straddle the world, two different worlds between anarchism and veganism, we find ourselves being two anarchists for vegans and then two vegan for anarchists. So I'm kind of glad to, you know, mix that up a lot more and get a wider audience.
Yeah, I'm actually really looking forward to that too. I think I think that's one of the great things about Witch Side is that it has its foot in like different worlds. And I think you know, just like some of the anti-prison podcasts I mentioned probably reach a different audience too of people that are, you know, mostly organizing around prison stuff. And I think that's great. I mean, that's what we need. You know, we need different podcasts that straddle those two different worlds. I mean, because that's how we're going to grow.
Yeah, like doing this moving forward, we've been doing Witch Side now for almost 4 years, every single week, and this kind of has rejuvenated us to push ourselves even more because we kind of found ourselves in a rut and almost not having the drive to continue. But getting it mixed up and just not doing it by ourselves, I think, is going to help a lot.
Yeah, and maybe we can do a vegan anarchist cooking show. Jeremy, you know, just like Martha Stewart show.
You know, honestly, my daughter started one. She did 2 episodes on YouTube, and then she just hasn't, you know, had the drive to continue. But
is she an anarchist?
She calls herself an anarchist. But...
Oh man.
She actually, several times I've gotten notes back from school where she'll write things in, like in third grade when they were learning about Thanksgiving, they had to write a report of what you would do if you were a pilgrim. And she wrote on there, "I wouldn't kill the Native Americans because I'm an anarchist." So,
so legit. That's awesome.
I was just going to say, it's too bad Final Straw isn't on this call, because I actually draw a lot of inspiration also from just their format, just like, again, like the way they run panels, and it's cool to think that, you know, like folks who are like publishing, you know, little zines or whatever, are, you know, there's now like almost like a circuit, a radical anarchist circuit where people can hit up, you know, hit up Final Straw and then hit up It's Going Down, and then we can, I don't know.
Going some media. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's important too. I mean, it helps, you know, promote projects. I mean, I also think it's exciting. You know, we had a recording of the Black Women's Defense League, and I know they just went on the Final Straw, but just kind of like, it's a great way of engaging people that, you know, are in the struggle with us, but maybe not like, you know, card carrying anarchists, you know. And I think that's great, and definitely it's been a great way for us to talk with people that are, you know, on the front lines of things, like at Standing Rock, or, you know, a wide variety of struggles. It's a lot easier to ask somebody to come on a podcast than it is to, you know, write an essay for a website or something.
Totally. All
right. Yeah, hopefully Hopefully now that we've named a radio station after one of his songs, I can get Chuck D on.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. What else? Is there stuff that y'all are concerned about that we need to be thinking about moving forward? Like critically speaking?
I don't know. I think the main question is, I mean, beyond like how to bring new projects in, because there are several projects that I would like to bring into this. And I know that there are people that have expressed interest, but just how to grow an audience via podcasting. You know, we've talked before, like how can some of these alt-right podcasts get like literally hundreds of thousands of listens? And, you know, it seems insane, but, you know, how do we get to that level? How do we make our podcast, you know, grow outside of our circles? I think that's the main thing. How do we break into, to use capitalist terms, how do we break into new markets? I don't necessarily have the answer for that. I mean, we've talked about some of the ideas, but I think that's a huge thing to talk about. Like, how do we take these podcasts that are talking about relevant stuff? I mean, talking about the far right, talking about Standing Rock and, you know, struggles around pipelines, talking about Trump and resistance to Trump, you know, talking about people fighting everything from ICE raids to prisons to the police. I mean, this is relevant stuff. This is, you know, what's on the minds of millions of people. But how do we take that and get it into people's hands? I mean, that's the main question.
Yeah. I mean, well, what I'm hoping is that if we exceed our humble fundraising goals, you know, we have money to put into printed materials. I mean, I think there are a number of like zine distros and people out there attending protests who could just, you know, walk around with a flyer for Channel Zero. And if someone walked up to me at a, like if I was a liberal and someone walked up to me at a protest with that, I would be curious. I would check it out, you know? And so I think that's certainly one way to do it.
Yeah. I think like, when I think about like fears that I have for like, what are the things to look out for anarchist podcasts, I'm like, are we just like creating, or are we enabling like anarchy to be more of a spectator sport by just having like, you know, all this media that people just passively consume, as opposed to something that like anarchy is something that people are like actively engaged in and engaged in conversations with people they're building trust with. And like, I like, you know, I'm not sure that there's like an answer to that, but I think like stuff like, yeah, going out to demos with like flyers for Channel Zero is like definitely one way to bring a like face-to-face element into it. And like, I think that's something that I like appreciate about Submedia's project of Trouble, where they're like intentionally having this element to it of like form, you know, have a movie showing at, you know, in your town and like try and get it a little out of the like just realm of being a spectator. I think that's like a thing to be thinking about as we're like moving forward.
Yeah.
I think that's a great point. I mean, I think that's a really great point. I mean, yeah, and that's something to think about. I mean, I think you know, what I would say is that the content we're trying to create is all about stuff that's happening in the outside world.
Totally.
And so we're not just trying to like create news that is just going to like be some like inside baseball talk about, you know, whatever. We're trying to create, you know, a discussion around what people are doing with, you know, the information they're given. So I think that's important. And like you brought up, definitely, I totally agree. I just went to a film showing of, you know, Submedia's new project myself. And yeah, but with the podcast, you can't really do that. You can't like go over to my house.
Yeah. That element doesn't quite work for the podcast medium, but.
Yeah. But at the same time, I mean, like, we are like, you know, especially like as people are spending more and more time to get to work, or then like at work, sometimes being able to listen to something. So, I mean, there's that. I mean, you know, so you know, people are using that time to listen to podcasts. I mean, I hear people all the time saying like, oh yeah, I listen to, I mean, we had edits going down. We had somebody write us a email saying like, I'm a construction worker and I can't fucking hear you in my headphones while I work. So, you know, people do listen to it at work. So that, I mean, that's good. I mean, give somebody something to listen to.
So like, one of the things I think we struggle with is that with the alt-right, we look at it and say, how do they get so many listeners? But all they're doing is selling fear and then also telling them how to solve it. So all they need to do is click the like button on Facebook and they're doing their part. When we're really selling, you know, idealism, we're really selling something a lot more that takes individual action to actually change your life, to, you know, become an anarchist and eliminate hierarchies in your everyday being. And so it's not quite as easy as what they're selling. We're actually selling something that takes work.
Yeah, totally. And I think takes like nuanced conversation that's not as simple as like as the formulations that the alt-right is working with of like, mm-hmm. you know, just like fear Muslims and, you know, deport people. And, you know, I think ultimately a lot of their ideas are like not terribly nuanced. You know, it's simple. And like, I think we're trying to imagine how to live like I think for a lot of us, we can't even really imagine the world we want, you know, and mm-hmm. trying to sell that. That's not a very marketable idea, but it's worth trying, you know.
It's easy to sell the idea of, oh, don't have a job, kick out an immigrant, right? Where we're saying, oh, you don't have a job, let's change our entire socioeconomic structure. Like, it's a lot harder of a sell.
But I think what makes it an easier sell is that, well, two things. First of all, the right wing, you know, I've been as a touring artist for 20 years, like right wing radio has been dominating the airwaves for as long as I've been alive. When you turn mm-hmm. on any AM station, you're going to hear, you know, these Rush Limbaugh types. And on mm-hmm. the left, there's nothing. There was this attempt at Air America Radio, which was like Keith Olbermann types, and then there's NPR, which is just essentially like, you know, people don't really believe any of that shit anymore. So I feel like the terrain is wide open for people to see a more radical analysis and to be open to it. You know, when I talk to, you know, liberal-minded people, you know, and I state my ideas about the state and reforms and how, you know, how we're just better at building power, like nobody ever disagrees with any of that stuff. So I think if people are just hearing that all the time, the likelihood of people who are on the fence, you know, of like them jumping over to this side, it begins to make way more sense when you hear people articulately talking about this shit. You know, I used to read like Verso, AK Press kind of stuff, but I never really identified as an anarchist until I was like around all these Denver anarchist Black Cross people, and I was just hearing all this dialogue all the time, and I was like, well, actually, this isn't pie in the sky. This is stuff we can do right now. And unless you're like really ingrained in that culture, it just seems like totally utopian, you know? And so I think like an educational radio station pushing these really complicated, nuanced ideas is, I think, a vital component to getting people off the fence and, you know, on the right side of history.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're necessarily that complicated. I think anarchism is pretty, you know, common sense and basic. You know, it's about reclaiming your life, creating a real community, not letting other people that, you know, run things and make decisions for you. I mean, to me, that seems pretty down to earth and common sense. But yeah, I agree that definitely, like, for new listeners, I think it can be hard to figure out the ins and outs of not only like the anarchist movement, but just like ideology, you know, coming into something like this. And especially, I think that's just harder because of just preconceptions people have about everything, you know?
Mm-hmm. I mean, beyond what we've already discussed, is there anything else y'all are hoping that we can do with this, both immediately and sort of pie in the sky shit?
I mean, I don't know for everyone else, but for me, immediately, I want to get rich, and long term, I want to control and dominate the world.
I mean, I think Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I was hoping you were going to say die trying. Sorry.
I mean, I think it's really important for us right now to have really big goals. Like, it's going down. I mean, our goal right now that we're about to push in the next week or at the end of the month will be to have a Patreon account, which we're hopefully going to be pushing for around, you know, above our fundraising goal that we've set every month. And out of that, we want to start paying people to write research and articles and columns and such like that. So we're trying to become more than we are, because we know that currently, we're in a really good spot because we're growing. There's a lot of people that are looking at our stuff. There's a lot of interest, but at the same time, like, there's only so much we can do with the resources that we have. So we have to kind of set our sights higher. And I think that, you know, we all have to do that. We all have to kind of, I think for so long, anarchist media just kind of got into this really complacent mode. You know, we were really complacent to just talk to each other, to just kind of have really boring conversations, in my view, just kind of like go back to like really old stuff and like just, you know, nerd out about things, which is fine. But I mean, if that's like where you get stuck and where you stop, then to me it ends and it dies. And I'm just so glad to see so much going on now.
Yeah, I think kind of like for me, one of the things I feel excited about like seeing anarchist audio as like a thing that is like becoming more and more a way in which like we like get our ideas out there is that I think like for a long time it's like the way that you like push an idea has been like you like get a print scam, you like find a print scam, you like print a shit ton of zines, and then you just like fill all the coffee shops with these zines and you try and get everyone to read them. But I think like while that strategy has maybe like worked in certain ways, I think it has like also has had a lot of like shortcomings. And I know for myself, I just you know, call it a learning disability or a laziness or whatever, I just like don't read a lot. And so like I'm just personally excited about having a lot more anarchist audio to listen to, and I think it like will involve a lot more people. And I think then the people who are just like just reading the like written word anarchist material that we're putting out there. And I also think like I think it's important right now because we're in a moment where I think like there just are a ton of people who are interested in anarchist ideas, or maybe just interested in the aesthetics of, you know, anti-fascism or something like that. And like I found myself in a few situations recently where, you know, I'm like in some kind of like situation where, you know, there are people masked up next to me and we're sort of like, it becomes clear that there are people who are like, you know, maybe like involved in some kind of anti-fascist activity, but they still just have the ideas of the like Bernie Sanders movement. And you know, like I was in a situation where there was people who were like next to me holding a banner, and somebody was like, you know, Bernie would have won were it not for Hillary. And I was just like, you know, I think the like there's ways in which some of the like, you know, fight fascists, fight Trump has really generalized. But maybe some of the like the more actually like explicit anarchist ideas, like there's a hunger for, but we're like they're not being put out as much. I don't know. That was kind of rambly. You can cut that out if you need to.
No, I thought that was awesome. I mean, that's funny. You know, you're sitting next to somebody who's blocked up and they're Bernie supporters. That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're just like, you know, they're like, well, you know, fascists need to be opposed. This is what we need to do. And, you know, we're just kind of like shooting the shit about why we're there. And it was just like, yeah, I, you know, Bernie would have won. And I was like, well, I'm not, that's kind of beside the point, you know, like what brought you here? And, you know, I think it just like it is a moment where the left is kind of falling apart. And I think in some ways anarchists have in a couple little moments presented themselves as like we have some answers. And so I think there are a lot of people who are like really hungry for like anarchist ideas. And I think podcasts can present themselves as a way of being like allowing people to get access to some of that, like that information and that, like those discourses.
You know, yeah. I'm sorry, I was just gonna say that the vast majority of the Witch Science listeners are not anarchists, right? And we've always measured our success on how many times we get a letter or an email saying, hey, you've opened my ideas to this. Or like last week we got another letter. It's like, hey, I wrote my, you know, first letter to a prisoner. And we've always been like, that's the first level of success that we look at. And then the other level that we always look at is when we're getting critiques. Because if no one's critiquing what we're doing, then no one gives a fuck, right?
Yeah. Fuck yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the big thing about podcasts is that they do tend to reach an audience that isn't necessarily already, plugged in already. And that's great. I mean, that's what we want. And I mean, even if we just kind of normalize these positions, then I think we've kind of done our job in some regards. You know, people have to be demystified about, you know, what we're about our ideas, about, you know, our program, you know?
Right. And I mean, one thing I was just thinking as we were talking is like, what was important to me was that like the term podcast wasn't in the title of this thing, because it remains unclear to me if podcast is a new form of media, or if it's like a social media kind of thing or somewhere in between. And so like, if you look at the example of like InfoWars or Alex Jones, you know, who've just been like just rattling shit off for fucking years, and they've assembled armies like that, you know? And if it's not coming from a cult of personality, if it's coming from a multitude of voices with differing, you know, differing views, I'm sure we don't all share the same views. I think that would lead to more nuanced listeners. But so if podcasting dies, if podcasting becomes a dead platform or a dead medium, we're still going to have, we're still going to have this network that we built that's almost like that's just as much a radio station as it is a podcast network. And I think that, like, seeing beyond what's right in front of us, I think, you know, it's kind of like, I feel like submedia does that a lot. And I think if we're doing that and we're staying ahead of the curve, then we'll be more effective.
That's why I like using the term and embracing the term new media instead of just like podcasting or one other subset, where new media encompasses all these new forms of communication that are now being distributed and consumed.
I think we've just got to keep playing around with these platforms and see what we can think of and see where we can go. I think that's the thing, just, you know, thinking about what seems like the impossible and trying to get there.
Does this new radio platform that we're using, does it allow us to stream live audio as well?
Yes.
So would we be able to like call in or do it like on our phones and stream live from different locations? Like if we had like a protest in Denver and you wanted to go and, you know, stream all the speeches or whatnot.
I haven't fucked with it. I'm not really sure. I know the functionality is there. It might mean like we'd have to look at it more. I haven't fucked with that. I mean, I know it exists though. I mean, I will say this. I can personally see measurable results from people out at protests who have been reading It's Going Down and were Bernie supporters 6 months ago, and now they're thinking way more radically. This is like one of the first times where I think like this approach of making anarchist ideas really reaching across to people and trying to communicate, I think it's actually having an impact, and I'm really happy to be, you know, associated with that and hoping to play a role in that.
Well, I think everybody is. That's the thing. I mean, you know, if you go on It's Going Down, you're going to see a lot of content, but you're going to see some media videos. You're going to see, you know, stuff from Resonance and Soulcast. I mean, you're going to see all that stuff. So, I mean, everybody's playing a part. You know, everybody's, you know, adding to that. I think the other thing too to keep in mind is that, like, as you know, the video that people will see says, you know, the stranglehold that the mainstream media, which which has historically been aligned with the Democratic Party, kind of this centrist, slightly liberal, you know, positioning, is like really fallen. And like, that's, you know, one of the big things that really allowed Trump to come in, is that, you know, people are, you know, using the internet to get news and ideas, and sometimes it's not really good, but it does it does create an opportunity for us. I think, you know, if anybody wants to do a really easy experiment and just like the rise of right-wing media, just like start a new Facebook account, you know, I'm serious, like it'll literally take 15 minutes. Like, start, you know, make a new email, go onto Facebook, start a new Facebook account, put a picture of Trump as a meme as your icon, you know, put some basic information, start adding groups, you know, Oath Keepers, the NRA, you know, whatever. And then just start adding people, you know, on the right. And literally, like, within, like, 30 minutes, I will guarantee you, you will have 100 friends. And, like, if you look through your feed, like, the stuff you'll get, it's not even, like, articles from Breitbart. It's just memes. Just memes and, like, moving small GIFs and stuff like that about Obama and, like, you know, polls of certain Democrats should be jailed and stuff about Muslims. Like, that's all it is, literally. Like, there's hardly any information. So, I don't know. I mean, it's insane that that's, like, the world that we're living in. But, like, it also shows that, you know, there's opportunities for other voices.
Or other memes.
God.
Well, I mean, I've been playing around with the idea of, like, starting a, I mean, it's called a sock puppet, you know, something, a fake social media account, but, you know, people starting sock puppets and just, like, sharing IGD articles and, like, different links and stuff like that. Be interesting to see what happens. Yeah, I mean, people aren't turning to CNN as much anymore. People aren't turning to the big mainstream corporations to get their news, and that's a good thing. I think it also highlights the more polarized the society is getting now. We're all kind of like heading towards civil war in a lot of ways. And I mean that in like multiple levels. But, you know, ultimately for us, it's good. Because if you look at like Democracy Now or something, I mean, as much as I appreciate what Democracy Now does, I mean, it's still, Democracy Now is still aimed at somehow addressing the power structure and getting it to work better, or, you know, change its ways or listen to the people. You know, it's basic leftism that's, you know, very progressive, but it's aimed at influencing the state. And like, we're not trying to do that. We're not trying to influence anything. We're trying to create an alternative and get rid of power structures. And that's something completely different.
You know, I can't remember where I heard it, but I heard one time that it takes about 13% of any group to force change. And I would say, like, right now, looking at it, the alt-right has that 13%, right? And so they're forcing change right now. So I think we just need to do whatever we can to up our numbers into that low teens, right? And we can really start to force change that way.
I don't know. I mean, I would maybe disagree with that. I would just say that I think what the alt-right has done is they've created a niche market, and they've been used in a lot of ways. I mean, and this is why they're freaking out about the whole Trump bombing Syria thing, and also the fact that, like, support for Trump is at 34%. There was a new poll that just came out saying that over half of white men don't even support Trump anymore. So, I mean, like, they've attached themselves to the sinking ship, and now it's going down, and they're really having to 5 cents. You know, they really have to contend with the fact that they've, like, you know, spent the last year just sharing memes about Trump on a tank, and now, like, nobody likes him. And, you know, their whole thing about, like, you know, white people and white interests. I mean, he's slashing Meals on Wheels and trying to get healthcare abolished and, you know, just doing everything he can to make America great for billionaires. And, you know, most people aren't interested in that. I mean, that's extreme neoliberalism. It's not some sort of populist program. And I think like, I've watched lots of documentaries about Bannon, and everybody said, there's like, yeah, he doesn't believe in that stuff, but he's using that stuff to, like, you know, ride this wave, just like Milo. And that's what all those people have done. Like, they'll use the edgy underground currents, you know, to get to where they want to go, and then they'll drop it. And that's exactly what all of them have done.
Right. And I think it's also important, I mean, at least from my experience, like, I don't see a lot of conviction on behalf of Trump supporters. Like, I never have. You know, when there's a rally for Trump in Denver, like, there's been, like, four rallies. There's never more than 100 people. You know, it's usually, like, 70. You know, it's pathetic. The photos from the conservative conference here at the convention center, someone blasted out a photo of it right before Trump was elected. It was empty. That's a 20,000 person room, and it looked like there was 1,000 people in there. And when we say we're going to shut some shit down, or when folks in Denver, you know, show up, you know, Antifa ready to, you know, confront the white supremacists who have said they're going to show up, they don't show, or if they show, they're hiding. You know, I just don't see a lot of conviction on behalf of the Trump supporters, whereas our side has conviction, you know, and we're able to forge alliances with other people, whereas, like, it seems like those people are just, you know, no, you're not racist enough, you know, you're a fucking cuck, you know, like, you're cuck, you know. It's like, it's cucked up.
Shit's cucked up, man. You know, that's another window of opening for us as well, is just recognizing that at the end of the day, I mean, Trump is politics as usual, you know, just because he's some billionaire that, like, came up and was a Democrat and, like, worked with the mob and, like, to get a bunch of buildings built, like, like, that's politics. Like, that's the ruling class being the ruling class. I mean, like, it does not, he's not different, really. I mean, just because he's some shit show rich guy that says a bunch of, you know, crazy shit, and, like, he's done a bunch of horrible things just like all the other ones have, I mean, he's not different, you know? He's not going to make lives better for anybody. And I think people, I just think what's interesting about this time is how fast that pace has been. Like, the last 3 months, I feel like we've gone through, like, 3 years of politics, you know? And you can see it, like, 34% approval rating for Trump, like, 3 months into the administration. Like, it is a fucking shit show, you know?
Yeah, it's like Emma Goldman said, you know, there are moments where entire years happen in a day, or I forget. It's actually a Stalin.
Actually,
no.
I love how you say, as Bakunin said.
What's the quote, though?
It's, there are years when nothing happens, and there are weeks when years happen, or some shit like that. It's a good-ass quote. I mean, you know, broken clocks are right twice a day, you know? Saul, quoting Lenin, you heard it here.
and you know, and also, like, it also just goes back to, like, the bankruptcy of these liberal pundits, you know, you know, when Keith Olbermann, you know, is screaming over and over again, I'm the resistance, we're the resistance, you know, and he's in a bunker with a bulletproof vest on, you know, and or like Bill Maher, his audio intro is like, we're still here. It's like, you know, we're still here. That's all you have to say for yourself. That's all you have to say for your politics. Here. You're still on HBO. Yes.
I mean, I think the thing for us as media makers, though, that we need to think about is that, I mean, there comes a point where it doesn't matter if you're right anymore. You know, it doesn't matter if you have anything new to say. I mean, you know, ultimately what matters is if you have the physical force and capability to, like, to do things, you know? And I think that's where we need to really start thinking about. You know, we just, IGD just interviewed somebody from Crime Think the other day, and it's up on our site, and probably by the time this comes out, it'll be old news. But, you know, if you go and listen to the recording, you know, that's basically what we talk about. I mean, people know who we are now, you know, we're household name for, like, the 10th time in, like, 20 years, but people know what anarchists are. We need to like show people like what we do and bring them into that, you know, that physical activity that we're doing, and explain kind of like what our program is and like what our ideas are about. And I think that's really like what's important. And I think for us as the media makers, we have to like think about, you know, our role in that, and like, you know, highlighting those actions and how those actions are really, you know, driving something new and exciting and different.
Yeah. And I think there's a balance to be drawn between the measuring our success by just in numbers and how many people can we involve. And then also like, I don't want to totally take on the Christian proselytizing model for like how we should spread our ideas, because I think that ultimately like that model is just quantitative. And I think what anarchists I think sometimes do well, and I think could do a better job of, and I hope that this like audio network can be a part of, is like spreading like a depth of ideas, and not just like getting more people to sign up and be anarchists.
I mean, there's always been this this conversation within anarchism, especially like when insurrectionary ideas got really popular. You know, there was always the kind of mantra of like, you know, we want quality, not quantity.
Right.
And I think, but my thing is like, you know, one of the critical things that we need right now is a lot of people. But that doesn't mean that we want to water down our politics to some kind of like liberal or leftist common denominator. And, you know, I think that's really hard. And I feel like every time people have said like, we want quality, not quantity, I mean, really what that means is like, we want a small clique of people that really control
totally.
What's going on.
Which has been like, I think, a total failure. The model of having a small clique of like standoffish jerks is like not great. Like that's a failed model for like trying to destroy the state.
And in defense of the standoffish jerks, sometimes motherfuckers got to get denounced. You know, sometimes it's great to yell at people, and it needs to happen. So, you know, I don't want to take too hard of a stance against assholes.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that also that kind of position like made sense, you know, like in a lot of ways, like under some like liberal president, where it seemed like, you know, things would just like eke out into, you know, non-existence or just somehow run its course, and then something else could come about. You know, and that's not, I mean, I don't think that that's what happens under Democrats, and I don't think that's definitely what's happening under, excuse me, Trump. So I don't know. I mean, I think, I think we have to come to terms with like what it would mean to like bring more people in.
Totally.
And I think, as much as my politics in some ways may differ with comrades like in the GDC and the Twin Cities and stuff like that, that are, you know, have gone from like 20 members to like 130, I think that, or even I know of other anarchists or anti-fascist groups that have grown exponentially. I mean, I think that's kind of like what we have to think about, like as a movement, like what would it mean to like grow, and especially grow beyond just that core group of like 10 to 20 people that seems to like be in every city. Like, what would it mean to like double that or triple that, or, you know, whatever, like grow exponentially, or at least grow to the point where there's 10 to 20 core groups of people in like different neighborhoods or different parts of the city or a geographical region. And just kind of like making those like really basic, you know, common sense steps. You know, I know in certain places people are having like regional meetups and things like that, and that's great. I mean, that's what needs to happen. Like, you know, we need, and I've said this before, but we really need to have in place something really strong, robust, resilient, that's really connected to people on the ground. And, you know, especially like after Trump leaves and some milquetoast Democrat comes in place, like we have something really tangible. And this system is just going to continue to break down. The contradictions are just going to be stronger and stronger, regardless of who rules. And, you know, we'll be in a much better position.
You know, one of the things that I've noticed is that communities that are really strong have really strong rituals together. And I think that's something that as anarchists, we don't have too many of. But where we see like good rituals that bring people together would be like, you know, weekly food, not bombs. And that's a ritual, you know, like every, you know, Saturday we go to here, we serve this food. And that creates that community space and brings, you know, those people together. But as anarchists, I think as a whole, we don't focus on those community rituals that build that collaboration.
Right. I mean, it's also the age old debate of, you know, being reactive versus like, you know, building our own infrastructures and mm-hmm. It's a lot easier to accept a call out for a solidarity action that's happening like on J20 or something than it is to build community gardens or, you know, find housing or, you know, fill in the blank, you know, put solar panels on everyone's house, you know. And so that's the thing I struggle with is when we talk about building these mutual aid based networks that can begin to meet our needs outside of the state. You know, I struggle to figure out like, okay, well, how do we really do that? What does that mean? You know, and in order to do that, you need more than the 10 people in every city who are already stretched too thin.
Yeah. And this is something that me and just where I live have been talking about, you know, because we've been talking about like, you know, with all these budget cuts and everything, like what would it mean to have some sort of like, you know, mutual aid program? Like, do we really want to go back to doing food not bombs? Like, and you know, what some people were saying was just like, you know, what if we started like the basis of our activity on like what would like make us stronger and like help us, and then trying to reach out with other people. And you know, I think that's a good place to start. And like somebody brought up like having rituals and stuff, but just like having that ability to come together every week and talk about what's going on and like be able to respond and make plans is like crucial and important. And you know, because I just see across the board for people that are, you know, millennials to like younger generation Xers that essentially don't have some sort of career or are just not like set in stone that they like have all their needs met and have benefits. I mean, we're just like totally fucked across the board. I mean, there's just no other way around it. I mean, if you live in a big city, you're getting pushed out. Things are becoming more expensive. If you've moved to a smaller town, it's going to be less expensive, but it's going to be harder to find a job and meet all your needs. I mean, you're probably not going to be able to buy a house. I mean, you're just fucked. You know, you are totally fucked. You know, we all are. And, I mean, that's the reality too, you know. I mean, I think that's the other thing about the anarchist project right now is just like the need for a revolution and just total rejection of like millennial life is just so apparent.
New York, you know, New York had they had an anarchist barbecue like 2 years ago. And I thought that was a fucking awesome idea. Is just get people out to talk, eat some food, and, you know, get some DJs to come out. I think that's a really cool model to build community and solidarity.
Yeah. Yes, totally. And, you know, when I was younger, we did that a lot too. Not in a regular way, but when I first became an anarchist where I lived, you know, we didn't have a space. So we had to be outside, you know, because that was the only other place you could go if you wanted to like bring people together. And I think that's really crucial. I think space is really important. I mean, you've got to have a space, you've got to have a place to meet, like, you know, show a film, like have a speaker come through, raise money at. But, you know, being outside too is critical because, you know, there's only a certain amount of people that are going to come to your clubhouse. You know, you've got to meet people where they're at. And also just like having a physical presence outside. You know, politicizing the avenues of everyday life is really important. Yeah. So, I mean, this spring is here. It's nice outside in most places. You know, the summer is right around the corner. I mean, I think this is the time to really kind of bunker down and, you know, really think about that. I think this summer we're really going to see some shit pop off. You know, there was an article and it's going down basically saying like, you know, get ready because this summer we're probably going to see as school is out, you know, and people, you know, are not in school, and, you know, just the, they're coming up against the police. We're probably, unfortunately, going to see more police shootings. We're probably going to see a wave of riots. And I think that's true in a lot of ways. I think we're going to see some shit this summer, and let's go into it, you know, being ready. And in a lot of ways, like, we've already done this stuff a million times before. Like, right after Trump came in, it seemed like every big place had, like, an assembly, had some sort of, you know, coming together of the community to kind of, like, talk about what needs to be done. I mean, let's start to put that stuff into place. Like, we don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah, our assemblies are still going, so they.
Yeah, that's great.
And you know, sometimes it requires some patience. You know, there's a lot of mixed consciousness in there, but it's fucking worth it. And I definitely see the fucking results with all these new, you know, almost all the arrests at the Turning Point USA were new people with new ideas. And it was awesome.
Well, let's talk about the Pepsi thing if people are down.
I mean, it's like, obviously the Pepsi thing is a disgusting attempt at recuperation, but it's also like, it's like a sign that like revolt and protests are on everyone's mind, you know, which I think like is just like a sign of the world we're living in right now, you know?
I just was like, oh, look, it's liberalism. I've been to this protest before.
Yeah,
exactly. Like, I was like, oh, you're fucking, like, what are you pissed about exactly? Like, the Democrats have been doing the same shit for years. Like, I didn't understand, what were people pissed about? Were people pissed about the fact that they were using Black Lives Matter as a,
But it didn't say Black Lives Matter in the march, right? Like, all I saw was peace signs, and then I saw something that said conversation, but it was written differently.
Because conversation is what makes me go out into the streets.
Right, yeah. I don't know. I mean, like, was there anything just about, like, there was nothing in there that said, like, no DAPL or Black Lives Matter. It just said, I just saw peace sign, like, unless I'm
it's
wrong.
It's just, like, the pithiest, lowest common denominator. Just, like, peace, yeah. Let's have a conversation, like, yeah.
Well, because my thing is this, like, I feel like that projection, like, really shines a light on kind of, like, what, you know, the liberal kind of elites, like how they envision the world. And I think that in some ways is kind of helpful. It's like, everybody in the march is like young and hip and nobody looks poor, and there's like a multitude of colors, but everybody seems to be pretty well off. Like, there's no aggression, there's no anger, everybody is like positive and like happy and like just has like these kind of like esoteric things that are saying like hope and conversation. Like, you know, nothing is like, you know, negative or against anything. And you know, the people that like join the march that like are like kind of singled out, like the woman that's making photos, and she goes out and she gets like somehow mad about her photos because they're not good, but then she like gets in the march, and like the guy that's drinking a Pepsi and playing like the cello and shit, and then like of course the model. So I mean, like, those are very like you know, targeted, you know, people that they chose. You know, they're like young urban professionals that are like have like creative jobs, you know, it's aimed at the creative class. So it's not like there was nothing in there that was like speaking to like, you know, the fast food worker that's gonna like walk out from McDonald's and fight for 15, or like the young African American kid who lives in the hood that's like mad at the police or something. I mean, or like some kid from a reservation that's upset because a pipeline's coming through their land or something like that. So, I mean, to me, that says a lot. And then, of course, like the end where she gives the cop a Pepsi is just, I mean, it's just ridiculous. But I think I don't know if anybody has anything to say about the reaction. I know they pulled the ad because people were making fun of it so much. Maybe I haven't read that much about that part.
What I find interesting is that you all are focusing so much on the crowd. When I first watched it, I focused on the police line, and I just kept thinking, I would have loved to ever come across the police line like that. They didn't have batons. They didn't have AR-15s. They weren't in riot gear. They were wearing baseball caps really far apart from each other. And I was looking at, like, right, that is shit I can take on.
Right.
Give me a Pepsi, I'm good to go.
That's a hard projectile. I mean, that was right for the taking.
Well, I mean, yeah, I gotta say, that just reminded me of literally what I saw at anti-Trump protests here in Denver, is like, you know, liberals like wanting to hug the cops, you know. Maybe the, you know, the other way around would be like, in like, you know, the cops would be like handing out Pepsis, would be the Denver version of that. It would be the cops handing out Pepsi to people to say, you know, we support your free speech.
It's the long game. You feed them poison enough and they'll die.
Shit, too much saccharin.
Has anybody seen the SNL skit that is based on that ad?
I thought that she was actually really well done, because it just kind of, it showcased like the basic racism behind all of their choices, and just how they didn't think about any of it beyond their little boardroom scope.
The one where the like director of the ad is like asking people what they think of it, and everyone's like, whoa, this is a terrible idea.
Yeah.
And the last one's like, can you put a black person on? They just put like their neighbor, and like he just starts talking, and they're like, no, this is stupid. I mean, it does make you think, like, who the fuck like thinks this is a good idea? But I've also heard, like, there's been a lot of, like, quote-unquote political ads that have come out since Trump has gone on. Like, supposedly there was some, like, political ad that ran during the Super Bowl that everybody was talking about, but that flew over my head.
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, I don't know. I was just listening to, you know, my wife listens to, like, fashion podcasts. And I think it was, like, the Garance podcast or something. And, they were like, you know, talking about how sexy protest is now, you know, like protesting is now like, it's very in vogue. So like literally.
Yeah. And I mean, whenever something's in vogue, there people are going to try and make money off of it, you know? And so that's the pet, you know, thus the Pepsi commercial, which was like a failed attempt at it. But I think it's likely we'll see some like not failed attempts at trying to like monetize this new market, you know?
The idea that it's in vogue really fucking sickens me, because like anyone who's been in the thralls of that knows that it's nothing to glorify. It's horribleness sometimes, you know? When you're standing next to somebody and they get shot in the neck with a rubber bullet, like that's shit you don't forget, right? And it's nothing to glorify. I don't know, it just sickens me so much.
But it's also, I mean, I feel like in many ways, like with like a lot of these, like the, again, I look at the anti-Trump protests, like, you know, we've had like these 5,000 person marches, and, you know, they are trying to sanitize it, you know, it's like unity and love and, you know, we need conversation. And I mean, this is really, there's a lot of people who think that's what we need right now. You know, we need to understand, we need to allow, you know, people their freedom of speech. It's insane.
The persistence of this idea that we need to be pacifists also pisses me the fuck off, because it underlines the fact that there's been no social change anywhere through a pacifist movement ever. It's never fucking happened.
Yeah, totally. I think there's also I mean, I'm seeing like a diminishing return in like arguing with those people. I mean, I think that having the argument is important, like basically giving people the tools to push back against all that shit. But I think specifically like trying to like come up against them and like win them over is just not going to work, because I think overall like those people are just trying to derail movements. They're trying to like be a wet blanket. I mean, they have no interest in like, you know, really having a conversation with anybody, you know, especially us.
I think oftentimes the best kind of like response to that is, it like, instead of getting into this debate of like what are the best tactics, is just to be like, actually, have you heard of this thing called autonomy, where you can, you know, you can hold your hope and start a conversation sign, but there's some other people who are going to do some other stuff and you don't have to manage them. And I think sometimes pushing autonomy instead of pushing the, like, let's just, like, get lost in this violence versus nonviolence argument, mm-hmm. is, like, a more productive kind of intervention.
No, and totally. And that's what, I mean, that's how the space is navigated here in Denver, where you have the protest police and movement managers, you know, putting their hands on people and saying, no, we're staying on the sidewalk. And then, you know, there'll be a black block and we'll just say, you stay on the sidewalk. You do what you want to do. We're going to stay over. We're going to stay. We're taking the streets. And if you want to join us, you know, your people can join us in the streets, but we're not, you know, or whatever. But not getting into an argument, you know, just, you know, I always politely just stand my ground.
Yeah. I mean, and at the same time, I think it's important to, like, put out our ideas about why we, like, why we don't believe that, like, you know, turn the other cheek or, like, pacifism is, like, the most effective strategy. Like I think we should put those ideas out there, and I think that that's what, like, a lot of anarchist media is doing. But I do think that, like, so often we do get lost in these, like, arguments that, like, are ultimately, you know, just about, like, about protest management, and, like, just, like, there doesn't need to be a manager of what everyone else does, you know.
Like, I think we get so caught up in the decorum of things, of, you know, like, we have to do things in this extremely proper manner, and, you know, like, how we do roll calls and how we, you know, do blocks. It's just, it's not that I disagree with it, but we get very bogged down in the nuance of organizing instead of moving forward a lot.
And that concludes this joint podcast episode discussion between a bunch of participants in the Channel Zero Network. If you dig where we are coming from and what we're talking about and where this project is going, please consider making a donation to get this project off the ground. To start it out, we're only asking for about $750, and that will pay for the hosting on our radio platform for the first year. Visit channelzeronetwork.com and spread the word. Channel Zero.